Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16, 1997.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you good evening or good morning, as the case may be, and welcome to Coast AM, heard from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west, all the way east to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Good morning out there, south into South America. North, well to the pole. I'm Art Bell, and as a matter of fact, worldwide on the internet. I shouldn't forget that. Thank you, AudioNet. It's great to be there. I've got a lot of information for you this morning. There's a lot going on, and a lot of it is certainly highly strange. And so we'll get to all of that. Peter Davenport from the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle is with us. Because we've got some very, very strange photographs. Anyway, I'll begin to unwind this story in a moment, and you can put the pieces together as you will. A NORAD is on alert. Let me tell you that much. NORAD is on alert, and the reasons why are not particularly clear. But that's not all. There's much more. So hang tight, a lot of information coming your way. Where to begin? Officially, from CNN, the U.S. Air Force Space Command headquarters in Colorado has tightened security. They're on alert as a result of a reported threat against that facility. Concrete barriers have been placed in the road leading to the installation, and identification is being checked by all people approaching the base, or for all people. The public tours have all been canceled. The blockade has been set up about a quarter of a mile from the facility at the main entrance. The Cheyenne Mountain facility is home, of course, to the U.S. Space Command and the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, assigned to protect the U.S. and Canada against missile and air attack. Now, that news began breaking on CNN in the early afternoon, and I began to try to reach out to figure out what was going on at NORAD. I can't tell you that I now know, but I may have some pretty good guesses. Now, check me if I'm wrong here. CNN reported in the early afternoon, and as the afternoon wore on, that this alert was in fact ongoing, but categorically said, it was not related to the coming anniversary of Waco on the 19th, nor the missing A-10 aircraft. Now, I don't know. I've never been to NORAD, Cheyenne Mountain. But my sense is they would not be concerned by the possibility of an A-10 hitting it with 500-pound bombs, or for that matter, even plowing into it. Cheyenne Mountain is hardened against a nuclear attack, or at least that was always my take on what they were. Moreover, NORAD does not concern itself with things other than space things or strategic matters, ICBMs, that sort of thing. That is my understanding, and indeed this explanation of the reason for their existence, correct? So I would not imagine they'd have a lot to fear from any sort of domestic terror that anybody could concoct, short of a nuclear device. So their alert, to some degree, does not make sense. Now, here is more information, which, of course, I cannot confirm, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Then I'll let my guest tell you about what time it was. Here's where the story really begins to get interesting. I called Peter Davenport, and Peter said, well, that's really strange, because you should see what I've got, and you will indeed see what he has got. Peter, are you there?
I'm here, Art. Good evening.
Good evening. Peter Davenport runs the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, and there are a number of subjects that we would like to cover with you, Peter, but the big one up front is you had a conversation earlier today with a federal employee who you will not name because it would not be fair to that employee to name him. We haven't told him we're going to do so. And so just tell me, what exactly did you two guys talk about?
Yeah, it's been a rather exciting day, Art, and so exciting that to give our listeners some idea, I was planning to be on an airplane headed for the East Coast tonight, but all of that has been dashed. I've decided to stay here and handle this incident to try to find out if we can get more information. In fact, some of our listeners may be able to help us. But about 12:30 this afternoon, we took a call from a federal employee who called principally to apprise us of two things. First of all, he had been called by a pilot who had seen something last night off the coast of California, I believe is the case, and he had called this individual to ask him, the federal employee, whether he could provide the pilot with the telephone number, the hotline number for UFO reports here in Seattle at the center.
Okay, is there any description of what he saw?
No, but except for the fact that apparently the pilot saw something that was very large. I'm not sure of that. We're awaiting a call, or we hope to hear from this pilot, or any other pilot, for that matter, who may have seen something off the coast of California or near California last night. The second reason this federal employee called us was to ask us if we had seen or heard about the peculiar photograph that had been taken this morning at 1530 Zulu, I think that's 8:30 Pacific time, this morning, 16th of April, of the object that had been photographed by U.S. Navy or National Weather Service satellites, the object sitting outside San Francisco Bay, or technically off Point Reyes. I told him I had not. He gave me a website address for getting access to that photograph. I went there, and I was flabbergasted by what I saw, frankly.
All right. So this is an employee of what, Peter?
I think I will leave it just as he is a federal employee. I have satisfied myself that this individual is real. I had opportunity to call his place of employment back, and I did locate him there, so I'm quite satisfied that he is a federal employee.
All right.
I'm quite satisfied that he would be in a position to know these facts, also that he would have the technical expertise and acumen to know some of the fine details about this particular incident or this photograph. But in short, what he reported to me was that a U.S. Navy reconnaissance or weather satellite, essentially a GOES-9, I don't know who owns them, but a GOES-9 satellite, I think they're in geosynchronous orbit, according to what you've reported to me, Art.
GOES-9,
more
yes.
about them than I.
Yes.
took a photograph at about 1530 Zulu this morning, and it showed what must be a monstrous object, if it is not an artifact, if it's not an error of the system or something like that. And I think, rightfully, we still have to establish that beyond reasonable doubt. But this individual reported to me that they have analyzed the photograph in their facility, and they've found many things about it that is very intriguing. One, it appeared to be above the troposphere of the Earth's atmosphere.
Above the, help me out, how high is the troposphere, do you know?
I don't know. Perhaps some of our callers can call in. I think that is the layer of the atmosphere that may be above the stratosphere, but I'm not sure. I am remiss in not having that information for our listeners, but maybe some of them can call
in. I'm sure somebody will help us, yes.
They have done an infrared analysis of the object, and it is warmer than the surrounding environment. I almost hesitate to commit this to our audience, Art, to reveal to them how large the object appears to be. But you have seen the object. It's on your website as it is on ours. It appears to be on the order of 20 or 25 miles on a side.
On a side.
And the individual with whom I talked at length this afternoon reported to me that their analysis suggests that the top surface, that is the surface that the satellite was looking down on, appears to have visible detail on it. Another interesting fact about this object is that this was a morning shot, apparently. And the illuminated side, if we can call it that, of the object that was photographed is on the western edge. Now, if it were merely a reflection, the illuminated side would be, of course, on the eastern edge, facing the rising sun.
Would have been about 8:30, I think, in the morning.
Yes, that's our redone.
When it was taken, okay. And this, indeed, was taken by a GOES satellite, both optically and IR, infrared.
Yes.
And we have got both of those pictures up on my website right now. And what the optical shows, everybody should understand, is pixelated. And, of course, it's pixelated. It's taken from geostationary orbit. So what you see is pretty big, but it's pixelated. So don't be surprised when you see pixels, artifacts. That's the way it shows up. The photograph on the right seems to show the same object off the coast of California, and it is depicted in infrared as white. And if you enlarge it, if you download the photograph and enlarge it, you will see it almost looks like an inverted L, but appears to be certainly in the same position as the optic photograph. This is really weird, folks. I mean, we're talking about something you just heard Peter say, 25 miles on a side. Now, this federal employee suggested that this was not an artifact somehow of the photograph, but was something real. And I do know from my NOAA series of photographs, and I can get those here, that you can take the temperature, you can find the temperature of any object that you can see, the water, the clouds, whatever. I'm able to do that here, so I'm certainly aware they would be able to do it. And this is some kind of weird object. Now, let's go back for a second to the NORAD report. I refuse to believe that NORAD would be worried about some fellow who might have an A-10 with 500-pound bombs, or a terrorist who might drive something up to Cheyenne Mountain, because they are, Peter, are they not, hardened against nuclear attack?
Yeah, I agree with your assessment. NORAD and the Space Command at Peterson Air Force Base and in Cheyenne Mountain, they wouldn't be in the least concerned about an A-10. If they were, they would just place fighters around there and keep an enhanced radar lookout, and they could protect anything in that area. Even if the A-10 were to fly directly into the side of the mountain, they wouldn't even know it inside. I'm reasonably certain of that.
I would certainly hope so. Otherwise, we're far more vulnerable than I thought. Now, the concrete barriers, you might imagine that they're on the lookout for somebody who's going to try to drive a truck up and blow something up. But again, it seems very unlikely, unless they, as a general rule, leave Cheyenne open and somebody could just drive right in. It's really hard to imagine. And NORAD concerns itself with strategic matters and with things in space. Now, we're not saying that the reason for the alert might be these photographs, but it might. Is that possible, Peter?
It's certainly intriguing to think about. I think right now I feel as though I don't have enough fact to start reaching any kind of conclusion. I think we're at the stage of principally wanting to alert the American people, wanting to alert the listenership to the fact that something appears to be going on. And in this case, I would focus on the fact, no pun intended, I would focus on the fact that we have this photograph that appears to be anomalous. The one thing this gentleman who called me this afternoon pointed out is that the object that was photographed from the satellite is visible by all, I believe that he said, five cameras that are aboard the GOES-9 satellite.
Five cameras can see it.
The, the photograph, if I'm all I can do is parrot what I was told today. I'm not a specialist in satellites. If we have listeners tonight who can set us correct, I would invite them to call in if that's possible. But he said that they photograph in the visible spectrum, they photograph in the infrared, they photograph with radar, and there are a couple others as well, and all of these five media, if you will, showed exactly the same thing.
Okay.
He said that is very interesting. One other thing I would add to that, they have analyzed the image, and they know that the object that is visible was blocking light from the surface of the Earth. He said that is very unusual. Sometimes he seemed to imply that sometimes there are artifacts that are visible in their images, but they nevertheless can see light being reflected from the ground level. In this case, he said, it's a solid object. And in addition, he said, there was visible detail on the surface.
You know how this is going to sound to some people?
Yes.
I mean, we're saying they apparently photographed an object 25 miles on a side, which would make it absolutely gigantic.
Yes.
I mean, really, ridiculously gigantic.
Yes.
And so we've got these photographs. We'll let people go look at them. Again, folks, when you see them, they're pixelated, of course, as anything taken from this altitude would be. But if you've been listening to Peter, this object actually then cast a shadow, be a way to put it, on the Earth.
Yes. The other thing that he apprised me of, he gave me some technical information about satellites. I really know very little about satellites. But he said that the typical scan time, that is the exposure time of a photograph like this, is about a thousandth of a second.
Right.
I can't confirm that personally. But if that's the case, the object was there and gone in very short order, we can presume. I have gone to the photograph that was posted by the government just prior to the 1530 photograph and the one just after.
It's not there.
It's not there. That's correct. It was there. How long it was there, we cannot establish. All we know that it was that, or is that it was not there during the prior photograph or prior scan, and it was not there later. And combine that with the fact that apparently the pilot who called this federal employee this morning looking for our number to report a UFO.
Yes.
Was not aware of the photograph at that time.
All right, and everybody should know these photographs we have pulled off, in one case, a Navy military satellite that has GOES-9 images, and in the other case, a Washington educational website, apparently. Both of these taken, that was the infrared, and the first one is the optical. So I'm beginning to be reminded of the Chuck Schrammick program a little bit, in that all we're saying is, and I want to make this very clear, here are some photographs that we have that we don't understand, that don't make sense. And it's worth discussing in view of the alert at NORAD, A, and B, the fact that five cameras all sensed the same object, and we had a pilot reporting. I wish we had the opportunity to interview that pilot and ask him exactly what it was he saw, but I guess all you know is, whatever in the hell it was big. Is that an accurate characterization?
That is a tentative assessment of what the pilot had to report this morning. That's correct. We've not heard from him yet. We would love to talk to him or any other pilot who may have seen something last night, or any other night for that matter.
All right. These are not the only things that are going on. About 15 minutes, I would say, ahead of airtime tonight, I got a call from a man in Yuma, Arizona, who once again tonight, as he did last night, is seeing lights, stationary lights of some sort. So we'll talk a little bit about what happened, the whole big flap in Arizona, and whatever might be going on tonight and last night with Peter in a moment. Stay right where you are, Peter.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Good morning, everybody. To recap, we have photographs of an anomalous object taken earlier this morning at about 8:30 this morning, or 15:30 Zulu, we believe, by a GOES-9 satellite. We've got both the infrared and the visual image. It's on my website right now. It was thought to be at tropospheric levels, whatever that is, in miles up. Very high, at any rate, and very, very large. Does that relate to the alert at Cheyenne Mountain? Why is Cheyenne Mountain on alert? All of these are just open questions right now. My guest is Peter Davenport, and in a moment we are going to cover, we're going to continue to cover this, but we're also going to talk a little bit about what happened in Arizona. Were they flares, or were they something else? Back now to Peter Davenport at the UFO Reporting Center in Washington. That's Washington State. Peter, what can you tell us about this whole Arizona business? I had a guy who called me before the program and said they were flares.
Well, I'd like to talk to that individual because I think I have the information, the data, the proof that would cause him to be disabused of that notion. Pure and simply, Art, the 13th of March, 1997, was the busiest night and the most dramatic night I've spent on the hotline in 2.5 years. In short, people can go to our website, www.ufocenter.com, and see a brief summary, about a 4-page summary of what happened. We hope to be able to update that in the near future. But in brief, what happened is this. An object which was described by all viewers who got a good look at it as being not smaller than 4 747s directly above their heads, wingtip to wingtip, nose to tail, covered at least 24 cities in Arizona in very rapid sequence. We think it was in the airspace above Arizona for not more than an hour or at most an hour and a half. We know or strongly suspect that it was able to travel at supersonic velocities without generating a sonic boom or shockwave. It hovered in at least three areas for somewhere between 2 and 5 minutes. In one case, on the northeastern quadrant of Phoenix, just a mile south of Camelback Mountain, it hovered above a mother and five children for an estimated 5 minutes. They were flabbergasted by it. We also know that it traveled through or just over the airspace of at least three international, major international airports in Arizona, maybe
really
as many as six.
Does anybody know or have an estimate of altitude?
Yes, a number of pilots called us, and they reported that altitude is always difficult to estimate unless you can triangulate.
Right.
But they estimated that from the quality of the appearance of the object, they were looking at something that was maybe 1,000 or 2,000 feet in the air directly above their head. There was a group of five adults in Dewey, Arizona that saw this thing directly above them. They saw it coming at them from the north-northwest. They pulled off the road. They were on their way into Prescott Valley to go bowling. Pulled off the road, and they stopped in a shopping center parking lot and watched this thing for 2, 3, maybe even 4 minutes directly above them. Nobody heard any sound whatsoever. The object at one point was seen to shoot a bolt of red light down at the ground.
Really?
The lights on the leading edge of the object changed colors. Just all sorts of reports. Was seen by doctors, by pilots, by professional people, by engineers.
Peter, did anybody observe any substance to the space in between the lights?
Yeah. You know, that's curious, Art. Some people said that you could see stars between the individual lights. Other people said that you could not. You could make out the outline of the object and that it was solid. We got many very, very good drawings. We invariably ask for three things: a brief written account of what people experienced, a drawing, and a map that will allow them to show where they were at the time of their sighting. The interesting thing is that almost everybody describes it as being the same shape until it gets down to Tucson. We have a few reports from Tucson from people who claim that the lights broke up and they arrange themselves in a nose-to-tail fashion, somewhere between seven and nine lights, and then they went streaking off nose-to-tail, I believe they said, to the south, probably towards Mexico. So it is one of the most mysterious objects that we have ever had to handle on the hotline. To this day, I don't know what it was. One report, interestingly, came from five people who were driving on the interstate from Tucson, northwest, up to Phoenix. They believe they were driving directly under it at 80 miles an hour for approximately 5 minutes before they got out from under it. That's how large it was.
Wow.
We have a stack of written reports now about 2 inches thick, and people, again, can see a brief summary of that event. In point of fact, I've been in frequent contact with Bill Hamilton and Tom Taylor. Tom Taylor is the state director for MUFON out there. They have done a magnificent job.
Bill Hamilton got video of it, didn't he?
Yes. In fact, about a dozen people, we think, got video of it. Bill Hamilton, Tom Taylor, Jim Delatoso, and probably others out there have assembled many of the witnesses to this, and they've assembled many of the videotapes. There were many people who videotaped it. And it was a dramatic object, and it was very, very large. So it, and in point of fact, the reports are still flooding in. I talked to Tom Taylor this evening. He reported to me that I believe he said they got 24 reports just last night, and there were reports, I believe, from the night before, because we got a call from a newsman down there apprising us of the fact that there had been reports Monday night. He wanted to know if we'd heard anything about them. So these reports, in point of fact, are coming in from all over the country. Back in January and February, there was a flap over New England, specifically New Hampshire. Then there was a flap last month over Ohio, together with the flap over Arizona. And just recently, we've been taking a spate of calls. Last Friday, as I mentioned, there was a major sighting over Lake Tahoe in the vicinity of Reno, of course. There was also, just prior to that, a reported landing about 50 miles north of Spokane. Now, whether all of this translates to enhanced activity or whether people are just reporting more frequently, we never know. But I have to say, from a qualitative standpoint, these reports are, even for a seasoned veteran ufologist, are, I think the most reserved thing I can say is intriguing. I hesitate to go beyond that.
In other words, you might say whatever else you're going to say. You might say the skies appear to be alive.
There's a lot of activity. Also last Friday, there was a report of 11 objects passing overhead. Two women were out walking their pets at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they reported that 11 objects passed overhead. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, only one source on that report, so we have to put that in the questionable category at this point. But the reports are coming in so fast that we can't get them into the computer and posted to our website fast enough.
Do you have any idea what could throw NORAD into an alert status? Do you have a guess on that one?
You know, I've thought about that ever since I heard the news this afternoon, and of course you and I have discussed that briefly this evening. I do not know. It could be some kind of very realistic training facility, or training exercise, I should say.
Uh-huh.
By the way, we had a film crew here Monday afternoon at precisely 1 o'clock. They arrived just on the button
right when
they were supposed to. 1 minute before they arrived, a B-2 flew over Seattle. It's the first one I've ever seen in the airspace above Seattle. I place no particular significance on it, but it's probably here to be worked on by Boeing. Boeing has a major portion of the electronics in that bomber.
Makes sense.
But it is interesting that it would be flying around. Again, I place no particular significance on it, but I do share it with our viewers. Again, on the issues of satellite affairs and images and so on and so forth, and particularly pilots, if people can add anything to what you and I have been talking about tonight, they should call either you or email you or give us a call on the hotline here in Seattle. We'd love to take the information.
All right. What I would like to do is invite that right now. So let me ask my audience, folks, please, If you would, if you're calling for any other reason other than information on what we're talking about, the Cheyenne Mountain business, those photographs, or the Seattle sightings, or whatever might be going on tonight now, because I've got some indication there are again things being seen in the Tucson area. So if you have no information on any of this, hang up right now, please. And we'll try and take a few calls between now and the top of the hour and see what we get. So only people with information on what we've been discussing should be calling now on whatever number. All right? So I'm going to go and screen a few calls. Peter Davenport from the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle is my guest. He'll be right back. Again, a lot of very strange things going on. Peter, are you there?
I am here.
All right, let's try and take a few calls and see what we get. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Art Bell and Peter Davenport. Good evening.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir.
Good. I just wanted to relay a little information to you. You just mentioned that this object was seen in the troposphere.
At tropospheric levels, yes.
Right. Well, I was just looking here in my encyclopedia, and just for information, it does say that the troposphere extends from the surface of the Earth to approximately 5 miles over the poles and 10 miles over the equator. And this is basically where all our weather takes place, so that kind of gives you an idea of the altitude.
So that would be how high again, please?
It says here on the average a troposphere extends about 5 miles over the north and south poles and about 10 miles over the equator.
So it would vary in a linear fashion from the poles down to the equator, 5 to 10 miles.
Right.
I was doing the same thing during the break. I agree with this gentleman, and thank you very much for correcting us. The troposphere is the lowest stratum in the atmosphere, and it, again, goes up to about 10 or 11 miles only. So this object that we're talking about, Art, must have been pretty high but relatively close to the surface within, let's say, 5 to 10 miles of the surface. That makes it very interesting, in my opinion.
It sure does. And, again, the fact that that it actually, whatever it was, cast a shadow on the Earth kind of cast doubt in my mind on the possibility that it could have been some sort of strange artifact captured by several cameras, which seems unlikely at best anyway. Would you agree?
Yes. You know, as you were talking, I would agree with that. One of the things that somebody might do is capture that photograph and do a little enhancement analysis with a computer to see if the object, in fact, casts a shadow which can be detected. Because the sun is coming up at that hour, the object is fairly high, it should cast a fairly long shadow on the clouds below it, which might be detectable with computer enhancement.
It might. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Where are you, please?
I'm in Chicago.
Chicago, yes, sir.
Yes, I clicked on your web page.
Right.
And the object, the picture to the right, I blew it up, and just like the object off the coast of California, there's another object just as big west off the coast of Canada and south from Alaska.
You're correct. Peter and I both noticed it, but we have not referenced it because, do you agree, caller, that the optical photograph, though in a slightly different scale, shows the same object that is pictured in the infrared photograph?
Yes.
Same location, roughly.
Yes, well, same location.
That makes it particularly interesting, in my opinion, that it shows up under any magnification and taken in any wavelength.
Yes, that would indicate that we're dealing with a real something, and I wonder if you can go back to your source, Peter. I guess your source was familiar with the altitude of the troposphere.
Yes.
And made his judgment on the size based on that fact.
Yes.
Would that be a good guess?
That's my assessment, too, Art.
Uh-huh.
Again, he was, I won't I won't emphasize this, but this gentleman sounded flummoxed by this object. He said that the people in their facility had no explanation for it that he was aware of, and they apparently, when he and I talked, had devoted some time and perhaps some hardware to trying to figure out what this thing could be, what kind of anomaly it might be, and they could come up with nothing. I believe he said it was the most unusual thing he's ever seen in his career.
That he's ever seen.
Yes.
Now, this is something that I would think NORAD would be concerned with, rather than somebody with a truck bomb or even an A-10 or something like that. But something of this magnitude occupying that kind of airspace, now that would get NORAD's, or should get NORAD's, attention, shouldn't it?
I would hope so. If we have an object that is roughly 20 miles on the side, on the each side, 50 or so miles off the coast of San Francisco, I would hope that our military would get excited and agitated over that.
Yeah. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Hello.
Yeah, Art.
Where are you, sir?
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay, go ahead.
Last night, about 8:25, I was out looking at Hillbop when I noticed like a star coming from the direction of it, heading southeast, and it was moving at a tremendous amount of speed. At first, I thought it was a satellite, but I got my wife, we both started looking at it, and it was moving so fast. By the time it got to us, it was straight above us, and then it started pulsating. It was putting out a very, very bright light, and we watched it until it went over the horizon.
Huh.
It moved so fast that I've never seen nothing as fast as that.
If I might comment on that, Art, I'm pleased by the caller's report. We have taken many reports here on the hotline in Seattle, very similar to his. Objects streaking at very fast speeds, going from horizon to horizon. I would again cite this case over Reno, reported last Friday to us. It's one of just many. We hope to have them on the website sometime soon so people may see with their own eyes what's being reported to us.
Okay, what does this represent to you, Peter, in terms of increased activity in the last, well, since, let's say, the Phoenix sightings? And that was when?
That was the 13th of March, 5 weeks ago tomorrow.
March 13th. So how does the activity between March 13th and now compare to, if there is such a thing, normal levels of activity?
Yeah. I would say the level of activity is significantly higher, but again, the amount of activity may not be significant because, for example, we have more people outside now looking at Hale-Bopp. That could translate to the fact that more people are seeing more things simply
sure.
because they're out of doors, of course. One thing I am very comfortable in saying, however, Art, is the quality of the reports. Is it causes me to sit up and sit on the edge of my seat because we are taking reports of discrete, palpable, visible objects that are doing things that no terrestrial aircraft that I am aware of should be able to do. For example, just about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, we took a call from Orangeburg, South Carolina. That's east and a little bit north of Charleston, South Carolina. A pilot, his wife, his mother-in-law were returning to Charleston from dinner. They were on Route 17, the coastal route, and he said they saw two objects coming directly at them. They passed directly over their car. He said he got an excellent view of them through the sunroof, I think he said, and he said they were the most bizarre objects he's ever even imagined in his life. That's a good sighting report.
That's a good sighting report, all right. I think that I'm going to ask you to stay on for a little bit because we bring Los Angeles and San Francisco online at the top of the hour, and I would like to briefly roll over this material one more time and use the period during the break here to screen a few calls and see if we can find people who have good, solid information on any of this for us.
That sounds fine.
So can you stay on a little bit?
You bet.
All right. Good, Peter. All right, folks. Here's the deal. Please, unless you have information on what's going on at Cheyenne Mountain NORAD or the photographs we've got posted on our website right now, anomalous photographs that appear to be quite inexplicable, please do not call. If you do have good, hard information on that or the Arizona sightings, then pick up the telephone by all means and give us a call. We'll be right back with Peter Davenport from Seattle.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 16th of April, 1997.
All right, my guest is Peter Davenport. And there is some pretty high strangeness going on out there. Peter Davenport heads the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. And we'll try and catch everybody up because I know a lot of you join the program at midnight. So stand by and buckle in. This one's really weird. To the material at hand. This is all very odd. NORAD is on alert. Cheyenne Mountain, NORAD. Now, my understanding of NORAD, and I may be corrected shortly, is that it concerns itself with things in space and strategic matters. In other words, incoming ICBMs, that kind of awful scenario. They've gone to a higher stage of alert. CNN reported that they say it is not connected to the stolen or crashed A-10, that it is not connected to the coming anniversary of Waco on the 19th. I'm going to ask Peter one more time to explain a conversation, Peter Davenport, that he had with a government employee. We're not going to identify this person so as not to get them in trouble, about two photographs now posted on my website, very anomalous photographs, that would appear to show a very large object, so large that it makes it hard to talk about, frankly. But let us once again, if you wouldn't mind, Peter, sorry to retrench, but tell everybody about your conversation with this man.
I'd be glad to, Art. I think it deserves repeating, and even for those people who may have heard the recounting of it the first time, they can test me and see whether I do an accurate job of it the second time.
All right.
About 12:30 this yesterday morning, or yesterday afternoon, that makes it the 16th of April,
right.
I took a call from a gentleman who is a federal employee in a technical position. He called to report essentially two things. One, he had taken a report from a pilot who, I believe, had been flying in the vicinity of California last night who had seen something that he wanted to report to the UFO Center.
Did he say where in California?
No. If he did, I did not pick up on it, or I don't remember it.
Okay.
Number two, this individual called to inquire whether we had been apprised yet of the very peculiar object which apparently had been captured in an image taken by a U.S. Navy or National Weather Service weather satellite in geosynchronous orbit, I presume.
GOES-9, and that is geosynchronous indeed.
Yes, a GOES-9 satellite. It had succeeded in capturing capturing an image of an object just off the coast of California at 15:30 Zulu hours Wednesday morning. I think that makes it about 8:30 a.m. or so Pacific time.
Right.
An object which I immediately went to the Internet and pulled down the image, and I was flabbergasted by what I was looking at. I cannot guarantee that this is not some kind of some kind of unusual error in the system or something like that. But what people will see on your website, it's also on our website, Art, is essentially a square object with a white fringe on the western edge of it. That makes it very interesting since the sun is rising in the east, of course.
Yes.
The object was captured in an exposure time of, I estimate, a thousandth of a second. That's what's been reported to me.
Okay.
And if we can believe our eyes, and I was born in Missouri, by the way. These photos are very important to me. If we can believe our eyes, this object appears to be not less than an estimated 25 miles on a side. The individual who called, again, has very good technical acumen in this particular field of images and satellites and weather and so on and so forth.
All right, and you called his facility back to be sure that you weren't getting a hoax call, right?
That is correct, and I had to work my way through their mechanical voicemail, and I'm quite satisfied that this individual is very sincere. He sounded very technically skilled when he first called, and he knew what he was talking about.
All right. These images, you will see two of them, ladies and gentlemen, on my website. It's in the newest items, and just click on that. And the left-hand image is the optical image taken, and the right-hand image is the infrared picture taken of the same object. Now, there were five cameras or sensors, including radar, on the spacecraft. And, Peter, you told me earlier that all five of them recorded the object. Is that correct?
That is correct. That's my understanding. That's what was reported to me by this individual this afternoon.
All right. And then beyond that, this object is noted to be casting a shadow, mind you, on the Earth, displacing light. Is that correct?
I can't confirm that. I'm not sure. I have not seen the shadow. But, again, I think somebody might be able to analyze that image with computer enhancement and answer whether there is a shadow or not.
But you were told that by the individual.
I was not told that. The shadow issue is something that I have proposed.
I see.
It would be interesting to analyze the photo or the image and find out whether it is casting a shadow. Since the sun is coming up in the east at the time of the photograph, it seems to me that a shadow should be evident. If it's as high as this individual proposed, it appears to be.
Troposphere.
Yes.
Which is somewhere between 5 and 10 or 11 miles high.
Yes. And the individual said that they had done an analysis of the temperature of the object. Apparently, from satellites, you can distinguish between 1 and 2 degrees of centigrade, temperature degrees centigrade.
Right.
With a satellite. And they have done this with this object. They've done, apparently, all sorts of analysis to it that I couldn't begin to recount. I'm just not familiar with that field. And they had been working on it all morning to try to establish whether it was some kind of error in the system or hoax or what have you. And as you point out, this individual did report to us that all five cameras aboard the satellite had photographed essentially the same thing in different frequencies. Radar, infrared, visible, and two other spectrum.
All right. We have other people waiting to get on the air. Let's see what we can find. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Hello.
Hello, Art. How are you this evening?
Okay. Where are you?
The West Coast. I'd rather not say exactly where due to the nature of my call.
All right.
I have a friend who is affiliated with NORAD through the military, an ex-Air Force buddy of mine. I'm no longer in. He still is. And we regularly talk about different things that are going on in the world and the U.S. And we just had a conversation this evening. I asked him what his speculation was on the A-10 situation, and he said he doesn't know either way, and he hasn't been briefed either way intelligence-wise. But what did come up is, and this is what prompted my call, he says that he had heard that Cheyenne was on a heightened state of alert because of a bomb threat. And I said, well, that's what they're telling you, that it's the same hype we're hearing in the media. And even their inside people that are located in remote locations, not at Cheyenne Mountain, but their outside locations are being told that that's why the heightened state of alert. I don't know if I believe it personally, but that's what even their controllers are being told.
Well, I'm certainly not sure I believe it either. And CNN did report that the FBI had passed on some sort of bomb threat. But after all, Cheyenne Mountain, as I keep saying, is hardened against nuclear attack, for heaven's sakes.
That's exactly what I brought up to him. And he says, well, watch your federal buildings and things like that on Friday. And as we progress in toward the 19th, he says, I would be surprised if there's not a heightened state of security nationwide because of that.
Yeah, but you wouldn't think that that would cause a rise in our DEFCON status.
No, I wouldn't either. I still believe the A-10 was stolen. I think we have a pilot that got bought off and disappeared personally.
Okay. That of course, is speculation. Thank you. But there's a little more for us on Cheyenne Mountain. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Where are you?
In Wyoming.
Yes, sir. Oh, Wyoming. All right.
I called primarily. I've toured both NORAD and Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs as a civilian.
Right.
And I would imagine that they've shown maybe 10% of NORAD to the people that they take on the public tours.
Yeah, I bet that's a good guess.
During the tours, though, they do state that when they built the facility, they put it on the equivalent of gigantic shock absorbers that are supposed to withstand up to a 5-megaton nuclear blast.
Substantially less than, say, even an A-10 crashing into it or dropping 500-pound bombs or the best terrorist bomb, short of nuclear, that a terrorist could possibly even cook up.
Exactly. Peterson Air Force Base itself is the actual headquarters of U.S. Space Command, and they work hand-in-hand with NORAD as far as air defense, that type of thing. And I find it interesting that nothing's being said whatsoever about Peterson. And if there's the big scare at the federal facilities about a 2-year anniversary bombing, why isn't Peterson also being put on alert, as it seems like it'd be much more accessible?
Sure. I agree. So can you contemplate any reason that NORAD would go on alert for some sort of domestic terrorism threat?
No domestic terrorism threat whatsoever would prompt a rise to DEFCON 4.
Would you think that's a BS thing then?
Yes, I do, especially since a year ago at the 1-year anniversary, there was no change in the status whatsoever.
I appreciate that's a very good point, by the way, and I appreciate your call. I've got to agree with him, Peter. That, you know, what's going on just does not make any sense that I can fathom.
That's my read on it, too, Art. I am not a specialist in these matters, so all I can do is conjecture. But as this gentleman was just speaking, he stimulated a thought in my mind, and that is, it makes me wonder whether something might be going on inside the mountain already, something that would cause them to lock it down until they get that situation resolved inside the mountain. In view of this unfortunate situation with the A-10, I don't think we know enough about what may be going on to really pass judgment, but we've been addressing the possibility of an external threat. I wonder if there's one inside the mountain.
Inside.
Hmm.
As good as a speculation as any, and I should remind the audience at this point, we are speculating with very little information. We do have some photographs that perhaps nobody else has right now. And the photographs, respectively, by the way, one came from a Navy military site, and the other came from the Washington educational site, the infrared photograph. So they're up on the website now. You take a look and let us know what you think. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell. Hi.
How are y'all doing tonight?
All right.
We're doing well.
My name is Pete. I'm calling from Whidbey Island. I live right on the flight plan of the Air Force base here, the Navy base.
Yes.
There has been an extreme amount of activity today. I don't know too much about what the planes are, but I know that there has been a lot of fighters, been a lot of really big planes. And it started about 9:30 this morning, and about 10 o'clock... the clouds moved in, so I couldn't really see anymore, but there was still activity up in high-level space. You know what I mean?
You're talking about military activity?
Yeah. Yeah, I live right on the flight they land right here. It's really
Whidbey
loud.
Air Force Base, you bet.
Yeah.
Or Whidbey Naval Air Station, I should say.
Yeah.
All right, so you get to observe the activity day after day after
day. Day after day.
And it, how much more was there today?
Well, it was kind of like, you know, like when we're getting ready to go to war, and they upgrade around here ahead of time, and there's a lot of activity. Well, I would say that it's about the same as those types of movements. So it's tripled.
Tripled. All right. Thank you very much. Does any of this add up to anything for you?
I don't know. One thing I would like to know from that gentleman or anybody else who might be in a position to tell us either about the Whidbey base or any other base around the country is whether aircraft are coming in or whether aircraft which are stationed at these military facilities might be departing, that is, leaving their base, their bases and perhaps going out to peripheral bases for deployment or something along those lines.
I have a general question I would like to ask you, Peter, and we'll see if you can answer this or are willing to even try, and I don't blame you if you don't. It goes to what we would be told. Peter, if there was an anomalous object out there, as this GOES-9 satellite seems to have shown, of that size, that giant size, or if there was an external threat, either one of which I would assume would get NORAD's attention, in your opinion, would we be told what was going on, or would we get some sort of story about some kind of terrorist threat? Which is more likely?
I am pleased to be able to respond to that question because I have to say, Art, over the last 6 months, I've been roundly disappointed by the feedback we've gotten from the military. Now, I do recognize that members of the military take orders from civilians. That is a relationship that I, frankly, support to the hilt.
Yeah, wouldn't want to change that.
I wouldn't want to change it at all. I think it's a good policy. But let's go back to the Arizona issue of the 13th of March.
All right.
The night of that incident, I talked to a number of people. The calls were pouring into the UFO Reporting Center nose to tail all night long and for about a week after, frankly. That night, I called the switchboard at Luke Air Force Base.
Right.
And I talked to operator number 5, a very, very nice young woman, and I said, this is just before I was on your program, actually. And I asked her, have you taken calls? And she said, frankly, we've been inundated. Now, that's what I heard, and many, many people reported to me that they had called Luke. By the next day, the official position was that the lights were flares, military flares.
Right.
They didn't this comes from Luke Air Force Base, I presume. They didn't explain how these flares can travel at supersonic velocities without generating shock waves. They can cover the entire state in an hour and a half. They didn't explain that. They just fed rubbish to the American people. And to the credit of some of the press down in Arizona, they got to the bottom of the story. And finally, certain individuals on the base admitted that they had not been flares and that they had taken calls.
So I take it your answer then is no, we would not be told the straight stuff.
That is correct. And we've tried to get information out of Peterson Air Force Base, both the Space Command and NORAD, and I have to say I was roundly disappointed by not only what we didn't get, but how we were treated. It could have been done vastly differently, and we were being handled by the public relations office there, and I don't want to criticize these people too badly, but they really couldn't help us with three. All we wanted to know is what the three satellites were that were flying in formation over the United States. The Canadians discovered it. There was a very skilled astronomer up in Canada who answered this question for the Canadians, but the U.S. military would not answer our question on that point.
That's very disappointing, and yet I guess I understand that if something big was going on, they wouldn't want to panic anybody, whether it was strategic or something apparently from space.
Yes.
They wouldn't want to panic anybody, so they would tell us some sort of little cover story, much like the one we're hearing right now about domestic terrorism. It's just very hard to buy wherein Cheyenne Mountain and NORAD are concerned. All right, Peter, hold on, and we'll be right back to you. So a lot of high strangeness tonight that may turn out to be explained very easily. But at this moment, the answer is not. I'm Art Bell.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Peter Davenport, and we are talking about the alert at Cheyenne Mountain, NORAD. We're talking about an object imaged by a GOES-9 satellite. That those images, plural, are on my website, one analog and one infrared. Take a look and let us know what you think. Said to be at the tropospheric level, 5 to 10 or 11 miles above ground, or in this case, water, off the coast of San Francisco. On the West Coast, we've had many, many reports of increased military activity. This is in concert, again, with an alert at Cheyenne Mountain for unknown reasons. They're talking about a terrorist. It doesn't make sense. Cheyenne is hardened against a nuclear attack. Why would they be concerned about a terrorist with an A-10 or a truck bomb or anything else? Just a thought. To Peter Davenport at the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. And Peter, before I forget it, would you give out your number?
You bet. Also, I'd like to give out our website address, if I could, please.
Absolutely.
It's one of those very easy to remember websites. It's simply www.ufocenter, one word, UFOCENTER.com, and people will find our data posted there.
All right. Very good. Let's see what we've got. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Art.
Good morning. Where are you? Well, maybe I'd better not ask.
I can tell you. I'm passing through the area en route. My name's Doug. I'm currently located in Chicago. I won't be here much longer.
Okay.
I'll be as brief as possible. I have never actually been inside Cheyenne Mountain. However, I served in an installation similar to it. And it is hardened completely against any nuclear attack. The buildings are actually shock mounted. Once you're inside it, and it has the ability to seal itself off completely from the outside, including electrical, water, food, communications, anything like that, it would be virtually impossible to cut it off from the outside. An A-10 attack or even a terrorist attack, it would be impervious to that once the blast doors are closed and they're completely sealed off.
So
I don't know if he was aware of that or not.
So in other words, you don't buy the present reason given for the alert?
Oh, absolutely not. Once you close the blast doors and you go on your own water supply, electricity or whatever, you're impervious to attack. I mean, it'll withstand. That particular installation is hardened enough to where it supposedly will withstand a ground zero nuclear blast.
All right. You're right. Thank you. There's a lot of great puzzles about this, Peter. Here's the facts. The pictures that we're showing tonight, notwithstanding, the alert status of NORAD could be an attempt to draw attention away from the Air Force's failure to locate the A-10. He says, I mean, after all, would they so publicly announce, and this is interesting, would they so publicly announce a heightened alert status at Cheyenne and NORAD? I rather believe that if they were really worried, the tighter security precautions would be implemented without telling anybody about it.
Yes.
That's a pretty good point.
That's my assessment, too. And I think had they been worried about that A-10, they would have been initiating this elevated security 2 weeks ago, not now.
Mm-hmm. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell. Where are you calling from, please?
WMTA in Central City.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Art, we have a mutual friend that lives in Colorado. I just got an email from him. You know, Bill Settmeyer with NSN Network Services.
I know Bill Settmeyer very well indeed. And before we go any further, why don't you go ahead, and I don't allow this normally, but please identify who you are.
This is Brian Smithers, General Manager at WMTA.
Our affiliate there.
And Bill and I have been on the Internet tonight. He just sent me an email concerning the Cheyenne Mountain and Peterson Air Force Base, which is a space command. The theory out there is, and I'll forward the email to you.
All right, please.
But for brevity here, the theory is right now that the security increase, which now prohibits all civilian and military tours and visits to Cheyenne Mountain and Peterson Air Force Base Space Command, requires 100% photo ID personal verification to staff identity before entry. May be due to recognition that Button, referring to the pilot of the A-10, might have dropped his bombs to lighten the A-10 and extend its range into southern Wyoming or eastern Utah, where he had some, quote, prearranged, end quote, landing spot set up. This from today's Denver Post, and that's from Bill Settmeyer over in Vail.
Bill Settmeyer is at NSN, which is a company that uplinks my signal, by the way, folks. So he's a credible source. Boy, I really want to thank you, and I'll look forward to that email being forwarded.
Okay, Art. It'll be there shortly.
Thank you, my friend. Take
All
care.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. Stranger and stranger, huh?
Yeah.
I don't get this, Peter. One incident after another, it seems. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Steve in Riverside, California.
Yes, sir.
And my brother is a truck driver. He drives a milk tank truck between Riverside here and Arizona, and he leaves in the afternoon, so he's out there during the night, and he gets home about 3 or 4 in the morning. He called me this morning. He was really excited about some things he saw last night out there around the California-Arizona line, and when I heard some of the things that Peter was saying, I just had to call in. It's really nothing new, but it blew me away when I heard, well, he was right around the state line coming back west. It was about 9:45, and he said there were 5, not really bright white, but pinkish lights up in the sky in a line, a perfectly neat line. No landing lights or any other kind of lights, and he said that he watched them, and there's no place to pull off when the trucker, you get a ticket for it, but he was doing the best he could. He said then two of them disappeared, and then the other 3 disappeared, and then they all came back on, and when they came back on, they shot, he couldn't see the beam, but he said he looked to the right up on the mountain range, and there was a huge circle, like a great big red spotlight of infrared light. He said it lit up, he was estimating the size had to be probably 4 or 5 miles across from where he was at. And he said it was just a perfect red circle. They went out again. They came back on again, the white lights in the sky. And then the 2 that were furthest from him shot off to the left, and then the other 3 just went out. But what blew me away was when Peter was talking about the red spotlights that had been sighted. And I just thought, and there was also a lot of bombers coming into the Marine base down there tonight was not there last night. So anyhow, just something is for sure going on. I just wanted to reiterate my story there.
Any questions, Peter?
Very interesting report. In fact, I'd like to put out an appeal to anybody who may live in the vicinity of a military base to keep their eyes open. If they see what they think is unusual activity, make a record of it, the time, the type of aircraft, what condition the aircraft are in, whether they're carrying weapons or have pylons on their wings and so on and so forth.
That's a good point.
We need hard information more than just rumors and surmise.
My brother notices the aircraft from time to time, almost every evening out there, but they're doing, they come in, land, and then they take off. It's like they're doing drills.
That's practice.
But he said none of them were taking back off tonight. They were all, he said, one fighter after the other and helicopters were coming in and landing and staying there, and he said
it wasn't a touchdown circle, touchdown practice kind of deal.
Exactly. They were coming in and parking.
I've got you.
So.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. First time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, me and my buddy saw a satellite a couple months ago for the comet.
You saw a satellite?
Oh, well, check it out. It came down and it entered the atmosphere and it skimmed across. It was a... We saw it come down.
Okay, well, the satellites are, until it's all done, doesn't re-enter the atmosphere.
Oh, I know. I know. It was that thing that you were talking about. We could see it was, like, huge, and it entered into the cusp right before the sunset.
Where are you?
I'm in Arizona, Peoria.
So are you saying, sir, that you saw space material coming back into the atmosphere that was burning up? Is that what you're saying?
No. It it came down, and we could see the sun reflecting off the bottom. It was way up there. We knew it was a good 25 miles across. This is a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we both saw it, and it sounds like that thing.
All right. Well, we appreciate the report. I just don't know what to do with all these reports. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Peter Davenport. Hello.
Good morning. I'm calling from Denver.
Yes, sir.
And I noticed yesterday in the early morning hours, apparently all of the local Denver television stations ran emergency broadcast network tests.
Right.
And there was a crawl on one of the screens. They normally don't attract my attention, but I noticed them on three different stations. And there was a crawl on one that said that this was required by the FCC, and it was a coordinated test by all the local stations, and it was conducted monthly. Well, I keep a pretty good close eye on the television, and it's been ages since I saw one of those tests. I don't think they're conducted on a monthly basis.
Well, as you well know, your city is a rather sensitive place at the moment.
Oh, definitely.
All right, I appreciate the information. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell.
Hi, I've been listening to your show.
Yes.
And I'm on active duty now with the Air Force.
Yes, sir.
And I just got put on alert status.
Where are you located, please, sir?
I do not want to divulge that information, but I'm heading out west within the hour.
Can you tell us what kind of alert status?
We're at DEFCON 4, and I cannot really get into it, but it's really big.
Are you calling from a military facility, sir, or are you reserve and off post now?
I'm off post right now. I'm heading into work.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there anything else you can tell us or will tell us, or is that it?
I've seen your website, and I never seen anything like this before in my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you say what your specialty is, sir, or what branch of the service you are in?
An Air Force fighter pilot.
And what do you fly, could I ask, please?
F-14s.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell. Hi.
Yeah, this is Chuck up in Clackamas, Oregon.
Hi, Chuck.
And I just, I have another website that has those pictures.
Yes.
And this is the government's website.
Uh-huh. Well, that's where these came from.
Okay. This particular one, you can get the pictures in half-hour intervals?
Yes.
You know, if you're interested in that?
That's where we got that photo this morning, sir.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where it came from. Thank you very much. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell.
Yeah, Mr. Bell.
Yes.
And Mr. Davenport.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask you a question with all your expertise. Why isn't it that any of these alien supposeds show up in the metropolitan areas and whatnot? It always seems to be in these remote areas.
Well, Phoenix, sir, is that metropolitan enough for you?
Well,
that's 2 million people nearly or over now, I guess, 2 million people. That's pretty urban.
Yeah, that is quite urban. What do you think's going on, Art? Do you think we're going to be under invasion, or will we stir it up here?
I don't know. You want to answer that one, Peter?
No, I think I'm going to duck that one,
yeah,
too.
Me too.
I'd go back to the first question, though. I agree with you, Art, that these sightings are not occurring over rural areas. Go to our website. Anybody can go to our website. Look at the 17th of November, 1995. An object went right over New York City, and it went all the way down the East Coast. It must have passed over the heads of tens of millions of people. Anybody who believes that UFO sightings take place over only in rural areas
just is not familiar with the data.
They're simply more likely to be seen in rural areas because there is less light, and there's more reason to look up than there is when you're in the city where you're concerned with what's right in front of you.
That's right. There are a lot of variables there.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell. Hi.
Yes, this is Frank in Seattle.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, to Peter, too. I met him on Saturday, so I think he may know who I am.
Oh, yes.
I did enhancements of the picture of the these objects.
Yes.
On the satellite. Okay. One of them, there's actually two, as you somebody else called in about.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, the other one is at approximately latitude 51 degrees, I would say it is. Longitude approximately 140.
Right.
Okay, I enhanced it, and it's a rectangular type shape on the other object.
Really?
Really.
And it's pretty like square type, but rectangular, okay? I mean, each side is, you know, it's pretty much about the same. The sides are just a little bit smaller on the sides, right and left. And it's a little bit longer on the top and the bottom. But it's perfectly, you know, like square. It's not like different types of, or perfectly rectangular, I guess you should say.
Wow.
Okay, that's one of them. Now, the other one, okay, it is... it has got a little bit of a chunk taken out. It's not perfectly rectangular.
It appeared to me to be an inverted L shape when you enhanced it.
Right, that's kind of it. And that's what I brought up on the screen here, and that's what it pretty much shows on that one.
Now, again, these showed up on five separate sensors on the satellite. So it's not as though it was a glitch in the analog or in the infrared or whatever. But five separate sensors, including radar, apparently.
Okay, now the enhancement shows it to be pretty bright white as far as I can see it on there.
I agree.
And like you say, it is pretty much a backwards L, but they're both about the same size. I would say the second one is probably a little bit bigger based on that it doesn't have the chunk taken out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a little like out of the corner of it. It's a little not exactly... perfectly rectangular on the first one near California.
All right. Well, I appreciate the information. Peter, your source told you there was how much temperature difference could they measure between this object and the water or the surrounding air or however they do it?
My impression was, I don't remember the exact figures. He gave me a lot of information, and I didn't tape record his description, but my impression was it was a significant difference between the skin temperature of the object and what they knew to be the temperature of the surrounding area at that altitude in the troposphere. So there was no question in his mind but what this was a warm object. And that gentleman who just called, if he would like to share his work, I would invite him to send copies of that to you, Art, so you can put it on your website. We would certainly welcome anything he might be able to send to us as well to be able to take a look at it.
All right.
If he can do enhancement work, also, one thing I'd invite him to do, sounds like he has some technical expertise, is look for a shadow around either one of the objects.
All right. There are many, many, many people in the audience who are going to be going to work on these photographs. And they came directly from a government site. So I don't know what to tell you all. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Peter Davenport and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi, my name is William. I live in Hawaii.
Yes, sir.
And I am right outside of Hickam Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and, well, just this morning, a lot of air activity has been going on here.
Really?
A lot of fueler, you know, the DC-3s?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of fueler planes have been going out. And,
DC-3s or DC-10s?
DC-10s, excuse me.
Yes.
Yeah, they were all going out this morning, and then a few Apaches were lifting off this morning.
Mm-hmm. Is that unusual activity, would you say? Are you familiar with the post there?
Yeah, a few times there's DC-10s that come in and, you know, do rounds and things like that. But, I mean, at least 10 took off this morning.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's
and then,
quite a number of aircraft. That's
how different is that from any other day?
Well, usually on the weekdays they do rounds. Just one or two DC-10s do rounds. But... that's just the usual, just one or two. But this morning there was lines. Because we live right outside the base, and so we can actually see the airfield, and they were all lined up getting ready to go. And we actually watched them go.
What the hell is going on? All right, thank you. So I'm beginning to see a sort of pattern here, aren't you, Peter?
Yeah. If we can believe these reports, there, I have some serious questions about some of the reports that have come in here just recently. A report of an Air Force pilot flying an F-14. If, at last account, an F-14 was a Navy jet.
Yep.
Maybe there could be some crossover there. I don't know. But, again, if people can provide us with hard information, I think that's what we need at this point, Art.
All right.
Try to assess what's going on.
All right. Well, I appreciate your coming on the air with us this morning, Peter, and particularly for staying an extra hour. It's a big puzzle. I don't have the answers. You don't have them, but at least we've got a little something. And so as the reports come in, we'll try and put the puzzle together.
You bet. I appreciate the time, Art. Just in closing, I would point out that, you know, if it were not for programs like yours, Dreamland and Coast to Coast, I don't know how this word would get out.
Well, it probably wouldn't.
These events. I've been to the press and tried to give them these facts.
I know. You're just not interested. You don't even need to say it. No. Peter, we've got to go. Thank you, my friend, and we will talk to you as the occasion arises.
It's been delightful. Thank you, Art.
Take care.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
It is indeed a night of high strangeness. There are reports of lights being seen. There are military photographs of objects impossibly large off the coast of California. Reports of military activity. NORAD is on alert, ostensibly because of a terrorist threat, it is most widely thought. Which seems not a satisfactory explanation for why NORAD and Cheyenne Mountain hardened to be able to take a direct nuclear hit would be concerned about, let us say, a stray A-10 or even a person with a bomb in a truck. So we're thoughtful on these matters. If you want to see the photographs in question that we've been discussing with Peter Davenport, they're on my website at www.artbell.com. These photographs were not taken by an amateur, but rather by the GOES-9 satellite. Very briefly, just before I bring Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames, on from SciTech, you know, you weren't expecting that, were you? Hi, Art, as you know, they have sealed the mountain here in Colorado, and the military is on full alert here. I live just a few blocks from Buckley Air Base here in the Denver suburb of Aurora. Buckley is the home of the 2nd Division Space Warning Center, the receiving and tracking station for NORAD. I am an avid military air monitor and have been monitoring Buckley most of the day. While Buckley is normally an active base, the military air traffic in and out of here today has been nearly nonstop. A friend advised me that he heard on G. Gordon Liddy's show that they were flying a special radar system into Buckley today. While you can't get real close to Buckley, you don't really need to be, as you can see it from about 30 miles away. The mountain, as we call it here in Colorado, is normally open, and once you pass the guard station, you could drive right into the mountain to the blast door. Once it is sealed, nobody gets in or out. That's from Michael. Michael Curta, who is the Colorado MUFON state director. Now, a bit of a surprise for you. here from California is Major Ed Dames, SciTex Ed Dames, a remote viewer, and I think most of you should be familiar with him and his work. Major Dames, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Art.
Is there anything that you can tell us about? Well, let me begin and cast away everything else we've been talking about for a few moments. And when we first talked earlier today, you said something about the A-10, that you might have some information on the A-10.
All right. We broke away from a couple of our operations that we're running, in-house operations, to take a look at this A-10. We thought it would be a good break in the action. So we ran four professional remote viewing sessions against it. And our initial take is that the pilot is dead. The airplane, he crashed his aircraft. It is not in Colorado. It looks like it's in the our best cut right now in terms of an interim report, is that the pilot's body and the aircraft, what's the aircraft wreckage, are in a snowy high mountain area in northeastern Arizona, not Colorado.
A snowy high mountain area in in northeast Arizona.
Right.
Wow. All right.
And the pilot's dead.
And the pilot is dead. And how much?
It looks like he may have ejected, but if he did, it was very low. We can't. It's difficult for us to separate the idea of a parachute or an ejection seat from this. So his body's in bad shape. We know that.
How much information would you, or not information? How much weight would you give to the report as you have given it so far?
We would not report this to the Secretary of the Air Force unless we ran about 3 to 4 more professional remote viewing sessions on it. So in the credibility scale, a confidence factor from what, from 0 to 10, 10 being the highest, I'd give this an 8 right now. We only go forward with official reports at 10.
Okay. Now, let us deal with some of this other wild information that we've got. I don't know whether you've had access to my website or not.
I took a look at it earlier this evening.
Ah. We have these military photographs, these GOES-9 photographs, of something apparently very large. I mean, there it is, infrared and analog. Any thoughts?
Well, this is one time, as you know, as a former scientific and technical intelligence officer at the Office of Secretary of Defense levels, very high levels, my job during wartime was to leave the continental United States and be by the theater commanders, a four-star commander, during combat operations. In case there was something surprising on either the tactical or the strategic battlefield. And in that case, it would be my responsibility to discern, to use operations, research, and systems analysis techniques combined with prior intelligence to identify what was killing our systems or our soldiers and airmen on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen many things that are very, very classified. And this is the one time, I think, on your show where I cannot discuss what that may be, if it is what it may be. If it is generating all of this activity at NORAD, then we have a very, very serious situation. Now, I will at least append that statement with the following. What might you guess would be the biggest threat to this country, militarily?
That's a question, not an appendment to a statement.
Yeah, that's a question.
What is the biggest military threat to America?
Obviously, nuclear delivery systems.
Yeah.
Now, where would they be at this juncture? We have most of the land-based systems in the erstwhile Soviet Union, now the CIS, under watchful care. But what happened to the submarines?
That is an interesting question. My understanding is that a lot of the Russian subs are dry docked.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them remain active. I guess some of the top of the line stuff remains active for whatever reason. And that's about all I could tell you. I, you know, it's kind of information out of Russia is very scattered, and I don't know what they're doing militarily.
Well, the Russians were no sluts when it came to military technology, as you know. Yes, they lost the economic war, but they did not by any means lose the strategic war. In fact, some of their military capabilities were extremely brilliant. The SS-18 is a good case in point. One of the best ICBMs ever made. Was one of the most formidable threats to this country until the end of the Cold War. But the Soviets had their own SDI program, or really a response to our SDI program.
Right.
And those kinds of things, if they were implemented, would be very secret and might look very, very different than anything one might think an SDI system would look like. Mm. Might not be an anti-ballistic missile system that used anti-ballistic missiles.
Okay,
there may be other things out there.
Now, there have been reports over the last several days of a lot of active work going on in Russia digging very deep bunkers. That work is still going on actively right now, despite their financial hardships. And you've got to scratch your head about that one a little bit, too. Why would they be spending precious money, rubles, on digging hardened bunkers when all the war is supposed to be over?
Well, it's still a very, very dangerous world. It's more dangerous than it was during the mutually assured destruction period in many ways. And for continuity of government purposes, you'd still, in order to have a country left after a possible war, you'd have to have a command structure, command, control, communications, computers, and intelligence. All of those things are in very deep bunkers, similar to Cheyenne Mountain. We have ours, and the Cold War is over.
We do, but they're still digging like crazy, and you've got to wonder, scratch your head about that a little bit. All right, we have also a rash, and I mean a rash, of sightings that began in March, about mid-March. Certainly the Phoenix sightings were extraordinary. They were no flares. And we seem to be in a period of very, very heightened sightings of all kinds of things crossing our skies that don't make sense. So as a general question, do you make anything out of that?
Well, the company still stands by our report of the object that broke away from, that was affixed to
Comet
Hale-Bopp Comet. And we have said that it's either en route or here. So but just keep that in mind. It's going to be here if it's not already. And that may be accompanied by something else, observers or whatever.
All right, on behalf of some people who have ordered your SciTech training tapes, I think there was a glitch in the delivery time, and I've had a few messages. So can you update anybody out there on for those who have ordered when they will receive their tapes?
Yes, certainly. They are about 3.5 weeks behind schedule because of some editing glitches, and we're working fast and furious on those now to fix that. So my apologies for the tardiness of that delivery.
All right, so the answer is they're going out about 3.5 weeks from now, or you're just 3.5 weeks?
The 1st of May is the delivery date for the introductory tape.
1st of May.
Mm-hmm.
That's about 2 weeks.
Yes.
All right. You've given us already a great amount of information on the A-10. While I've got you on the air, do you accept as reasonable the explanation of the NORAD alert, that is some sort of domestic terrorist threat delivered to the military by the FBI? Does that ring?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not?
No, absolutely not. There would be no reason for NORAD to close its doors unless it was undergoing an exercise or the real thing. A terrorist attack would have minimal effect on NORAD. And NORAD is not in the business of dealing with terrorist attacks.
All right. I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Peter Davenport, and that is, if something really was going on, whatever in the hell it would be, that would cause this alert, would the American public be told the truth?
No, it wouldn't. Not in this case. Not in the case. If this is what I suspect that it could potentially be, we would not be told.
Well, would you?
There's a number of reasons for that, Art. All national security, of course. But for instance, let me give you a minimum reason. One reason would be that there would have to be detailed information about what we are responding to if, in fact, we're responding to a real threat. And that detailed information would represent what we know about a potential threat country, an enemy, a potential enemy. And that might be very, very classified information, and that simply would not be given away. Mm-hmm. Nor would how we are responding to a threat like that, because the threat may be a ruse or it could be an error on our part. But those are just a few of the reasons.
It's now been many hours that this alert has been in progress. I began hearing about it early afternoon. I don't know when it actually began, but I have received no information that it has been canceled. So this has been going on for, conservatively, for 12 hours now. Isn't that quite a while? In other words, if they had evaluated something as a hoax or, you know, a misstep that caused an alert, shouldn't they have evaluated that by now and be out of alert status?
Yes. So I think we may be dealing with a serious situation. And that, by the way, that so-called F-14 pilot was not an F-14 pilot, so you probably already knew that.
Yeah, we both had our doubt about that. But I think that the reports of greatly increased military activity are generally accurate.
Well, I'm not in a position to know. I'm working on some other things. We haven't shifted our fire, so to speak, onto this aspect right now. But I will say that the only thing that my guess would be, the only thing that would be serious enough for the kind of reaction that you're describing, if it's correct, would be in response to a possible boomer or boomers out in the deep seas somewhere.
Submarines. Oh, Lord.
You have to be ready, because if something pops out of the water, you've got to be able to nail that. You must be able to nail it before it actually goes ballistic. Once it goes ballistic and it's coming down into the atmosphere over
too late.
USA, it may not be too late, but the odds of nailing that bugger are pretty slim.
Ed, what do you know about our ability to nail something in the boost phase? In other words, after it comes out of the sea and it's boosting, can we really nail something at that point?
Well, I can't talk about that, Art. Those are all strategic operations data, and I just can't go into those details. But it's you have to be able to know where a launch is projected first, and as long as you can see through the water, or you can predict where a boomer will be, you're in much better shape. But if you don't know where that boomer is, or if it's parked somewhere very quietly, the way that submarines are so wanted to do these ways, at the bottom of some sea trench somewhere, then you may be in trouble.
Well, there's, you know, the submarines, I guess, are generally always there. I mean, they cruise our coast as we cruise their coast.
That's correct.
The question is, what in the world would provoke this difference? It must be some sort of assessment of intention rather than capability.
That might be a good guess.
Yeah, that's all I'm doing is guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you've got a busy night, and I want to thank you for coming on the air. I'd be glad to hold you over a half hour and let you take some calls if you want them, but it's up to you.
I think the calls would probably be of asking me about operational questions, and I don't think in this particular case, Art, I really would be able to answer them.
Okay, so you've given us basically as much as you can.
I think so.
All right. Ed, thank you very much for coming on the show this morning.
Okay, I hope I've been of some help.
Thank you very much. Take care. It is a night of great mystery and concern. Why, oh why? Would we have been, are we under an alert status for, well, now in excess, I know personally, of 12 hours when they began announcing it about this time, actually, on CNN.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16, 1997. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 16th of April, 1997.
In a moment, the Assistant State Director for MUFON in Arizona, Bill Hamilton. He's the guy who got the good footage of the stuff going on over Arizona. You know, all those flares. Bill Hamilton coming up in a moment, who just sent me a fax which says, we have had sightings south of here near Chandler and College, I think it's C-O-L-L-I-D-G-E, College, on the night of April 14th. There was a sighting in Tucson, April 12th. A UFO chased by jets going west. Last night, at about 9:30, there was a sighting over South Mountain in Phoenix. We've had reports in Arizona of stepped-up military activity and military alerts. Don't know why. The sighting reports have been coming in nearly every night since last weekend. Bill Hamilton, he'll be here in a moment. Here from Phoenix, Arizona, is Bill Hamilton. And Bill, I had a caller a little while ago who said, you know, this whole UFO thing, how come UFOs are never seen over urban areas? I assume that you would argue with that.
Yes, I would.
Welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Yes.
Bill, you took a videotape of an object that appeared over your urban area. What's the population of the Phoenix area now? A couple million at least?
Oh, it's it's pretty high over the entire Valley of the Sun. There must be a couple of million. And let me clarify something going back to March 13th.
All right.
Okay, on that particular night, I received a telephone call to come check out a report of sightings over the Gila River Indian Reservation by a man named Steve. And he was seeing these intensely bright yellow-orange globes, or orbs, as I like to call them, just in front of the Estrella Mountain. Now, I have when I went down there, with Tom King, and Tom King has taken quite a bit of video footage of UFOs in this area, and it just so happens that on that particular night, my video cam battery failed. So it was a good thing that Tom King was ready with his video cam, and he got a little over 4 minutes of footage of these orbs as we watched them go on from left to right and extinguish in the reverse sequence.
Okay, this was directly or over Phoenix or what?
This was behind. Now, this is what I have put together on all of these events that night, at least four different events, and that's the event I call event three. It happened around 10 o'clock that night. The first event, which occurred sometime between 8:15 and 8:30, were these lights that Peter Davenport was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And various people, I think one of my witnesses, which is living in the Glendale area, which is in the northwest end of the valley, saw this formation of seven lights, and it was huge, and he saw it coming in from the northwest, and it was traveling toward the southeast, and it was at low level, and as he said, it was traveling at blimp speed, and it wasn't making any sound, And he's an Air Force vet. And
would he have known a flare?
Yes. In fact, we had experts in demolitions and flares who had seen this object, and they said, no way were these flares.
Okay.
This was an extremely large, well, some people were confused as to whether it was one object or a formation of objects because one of the lights seemed to move back and forth. But here's the interesting thing. By the time this formation got down to a location in Chandler, and it was moving at a very low altitude there, one of the interesting descriptions was it passed between the observer and the moon, and he could see the moon turning yellow as if there was something kind of translucent there. Now, there was a second event that happened maybe 15 minutes later, which is your big, dark triangle. That came down. Yes.
Now, that's what I've seen, Bill.
One of these big black triangles, and one woman was so amazed and so excited by this. She lives in Mesa that she just couldn't stop talking to me over the phone about it, about how huge it was, how fast it was, and how silent it was. But it wasn't. She saw it traveling dark without lights. But a little bit later on, a witness in Chandler saw a number of lights on this triangle, and one of the lights detached and deployed into the environment and came back and redocked with this object. And these objects were described to me as much, much larger than jumbo jets if they were seen on an approach, let's say into our Sky Harbor Airport. Now, event number three were these, what we took to be these globes or orbs of light over the Estrella Mountains. And event number four didn't come out till later. And we have this truck driver who said he followed these lights for 2 hours coming down Interstate 17, and he saw them on the west side of the valley, and he was delivering a load to one of his plants, which was near Luke Air Force Base. And he arrived there around 10 o'clock, and he saw these objects, which he described to look like these huge hot air balloons without the gondolas below them. And they were illuminated, and they had these pulsing red rings of light on them. And at that moment, he said he heard the roar of jet aircraft, and he turned to look, and he watched two F-16s with afterburners on, taking off to the north, followed by a third one. And they banked and turned, and they vectored in on the closest object. And as they did so, that object shot straight up and out of sight. That was a remarkable testimony.
What, since March, since the beginning of the Sirius sightings, Bill, how would you characterize it? I mean, we're in some kind of gigantic flap right now.
Well, here's the thing. We started putting this out over the net, and we started putting our email contact over the net, and we started getting a flood of email from all over the world. I got email from people living in Australia who said, the orbs you describe are exactly what we're seeing. We got email from people in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and even Canada who said our description matched their description.
Where was your... I recall seeing the footage that you guys took of the objects over Phoenix.
Right.
And who ran that? A lot of people ran it, I know, in Arizona, certainly, but nationally, who ran it?
Well, it was seen on Strange Universe.
Right.
Dan Rather, in fact, ran that footage because I delivered a copy to CBS. And I think one of the local news stations... Yes, Channel 15 ran that footage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it was also seen on Extra.
On Extra. Oh, that's where I saw it. That's right. Where I saw it. On right. Extra. All right. I don't know even what to make of all that, but add to that now the high strangeness we have of this alert going on 13 hours that I know of.
Yes.
At NORAD, Bill. NORAD's apparently in a lockdown condition and at a heightened state of alert. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked others. Does it make any sense to you that NORAD would go into this state based on a domestic terrorist threat?
I don't have sufficient information on that, but it sure doesn't seem to add up. It seems to me as well, and I've heard there's a lot of military activity down here.
You're also hearing that?
Yes. South of us, there is military activity. Some very strange things that are going on. Tom King is staking out a military operations area that's way south of here, and I've also been in touch with people in Tucson who tell me there's a high state of military activity going on down there, as well as some kind of an alert status. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I need to check on that.
Uh-huh. All right. Another topic. We've got these photographs. I assume you've been listening to the program tonight.
Yes.
And we've got these photographs, one optical and one infrared, of an object off the coast of California that, according to a military fellow who was responsible for receiving these photographs, was real and very extremely large. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to see the photographs yet.
Yes, I've been out to the website and looked at them.
What do you think? You heard Peter Davenport describing his contact on these.
Well, if this is an actual object, its dimensions are incredible. And what's it doing in our atmosphere? What is it? Where did it come from? What's it here for? Is it still around? Or did it deploy something that the military is very concerned about? These would be my questions.
Well,
if this is an actual object.
Now, I'm just a talk show host, and right. I don't even know a lot about NORAD and what provokes it, but I understand they are concerned with matters of space and strategic matters, whether they be submarines or strategic launches from somewhere in the world that would get to us. That's what NORAD's all about, I guess.
Yes.
Now, I can imagine they would be much more concerned with an object like we apparently have photographs of here, then they would be about some guy with a truck bomb, for example, or even an A-10, for example.
I would think, I mean, that's their mission, is to be concerned with air defense. And Space Command, I know, which is located in the same location, is concerned with what they're picking up with the defense satellites.
All right. Again, a similar question to you as the others. Would it be your feeling, Bill, that if something serious was going on, which it must be for this alert to be going on, that we would be told the truth about the reason for the alert?
No.
You too, huh?
I'm speaking from my own experience. When I was in Air Force Security Service, and we were briefed on giving cover stories about what we did. So I'm familiar with that. I mean, that's just if somebody approached us and asked us, what do you do over there at that Air Force base?
Yeah.
We had a standard cover story. Now, when it goes into this kind of condition of readiness or alert, then I don't think you're going to get the straight scoop.
Yeah. Back now to the sightings there in Arizona. And let's talk a little bit about the military response there. What was the chronology of that like? I know at first they said flares. Did the military story change, or what's chronology there? Because obviously you're going to be in contact with the military.
Well, this is very interesting because one of the producers from Strange Universe contacted a colonel out at Luke Air Force Base, and he was trying to give the story that some crazy pilot was up there with a light rig, and he was maneuvering his plane between radar coverages. And this didn't sound right. So the very next day, Tom King called Luke out there, and the story he got, eventually he talked to a colonel as well, was as far as they were concerned, these lights that were being reported above Phoenix remain unidentified, and that MUFON was investigating it, and they had nothing to do with it.
They had no confirmation, radar, or otherwise.
Right. This is what they're saying. But on the other hand, they keep saying, and he did ask this question, on the night in question, did you send up any jet interceptors? And they said, no, we don't send up any interceptors at night.
What?
And we bet them down at 7 o'clock, and that's it.
What?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure
that contradicts what eyewitnesses say they are seeing.
It also makes me a little angry. You mean if there was an invasion of our airspace in Arizona by an unknown object, they wouldn't send up an interceptor because it was nighttime?
Well, you have to remember that primarily Luke Air Force Base is a training base for F-16 pilots. And now whether they have some kind of tactical crew out there or not...
Well, sure, but it wouldn't be the only base capable of responding to an object that they could not identify.
Oh, that's true. And now I know that on that particular night, a very large object was seen over Bear Valley, California, and also over Las Vegas. We have some reports that say this formation of lights was seen over Vegas. So, I mean, even Nellis could have responded to it.
Sure. So, to sum up... something very strange is going on at the moment, and it seems to be continuing to do so. And by the way, Bill, I had a whole rash of calls. I mean, full half hour before I went on the air tonight, my phones were all lit up. People in the Tucson area reporting tonight seeing objects, lights that they could not identify, moving in ways that light should not move.
Well, you know, I had a report that on May 22nd at 5 o'clock in the morning, there was a V-shaped formation of 30 lights seen moving north. Then just received a report earlier tonight that Saturday night there were lights seen in Tucson, and jets went up to chase them.
Yeah, that's in your facts.
Right.
And is that the one where the jets got near and the object went straight up?
No, that was over here in Phoenix on the 13th. This is more recent.
It's getting hard to separate them here.
Oh, I know. And then we had the sighting over South Mountain, our big mountain right here overlooking Phoenix, just earlier this evening, I mean 9:30 last night, and now you're hearing reports from Tucson. So I'm wondering if they're going up and down the state again.
I don't know. Bill, I want to thank you for coming on, and I hope we can tap you on the shoulder if this continues with any new information you might get.
Anytime, Mark.
Bill, thank you.
Okay.
Take care. That's Bill Hamilton, folks. And Bill is the Assistant MUFON Director for the state of Arizona. So I guess the next feat is going to be asking you, and we're going to go to open lines here shortly, what the hell you think. I mean, with all that's going on, speculation is going to be rampant, and that's really all we can do. That's all I can do. I have no idea how to correlate all of this information. It's kind of like my book. The Quickening, this book I've written, pulls together all kinds of information and condenses it into proof positive that what I say is in fact going on, and what you're hearing tonight is sure as hell part of it. Events are accelerating toward something, and this is part of it. It's a very important book. It's going to cause a lot of trouble when it gets out there. It is I was informed earlier today by my publisher, we're now three-quarters of the way. I may have said half earlier. If I did, I'm sorry. Three-quarters of the way through our first print run. Whoosh! They're gone. We'll be right back with Open Lines.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 16, 1997.
And who is it who said news doesn't break in the middle of the night? And so it's cool if we want run repeats of daytime shows. Who said that? Man, oh man, sometimes I can't even keep up with it all. Welcome to Live Overnight Talk Radio. And I guess I would join with Tim in Denver yesterday, who suggested that you take a moment out of your day, perhaps later today, to call whatever affiliate you're listening to, whatever station, and thank them for carrying the show. It really does wonders, as a matter of fact, when you do that. And you should be polite and just say, thank you very much. It's one we enjoy. Or we hate his guts. You know, whatever you want to say, call your local affiliate and make a comment. Whoever your local affiliate is. This will appear in today's New York Times in hours, or probably is on the street already. Cheyenne Mountaineer Station, Colorado. Commanders at the North American Aerospace Defense Command maintained tighter security today, but said they may have, now listen, overestimated a threat of attack against the missile tracking center. Public tours of the man-made cavern deep inside Cheyenne Mountain, nerve center of the U.S. and Canadian air defense and space surveillance, were suspended Wednesday. Additional security barriers installed outside. The Cheyenne Mountain commander, U.S. Air Force Major General Jeff Grime, said in an interview inside the complex that an intelligence warning had prompted him to tighten security, even though the threat was not immediate nor clear-cut. He said, quote, "You've got to take prudent actions," end quote, "even if you err on the side of caution." He said this after ordering the heightened security, which included starting a 24-hour security watch at a secondary entrance to the mountain complex that normally is monitored only by video cameras and other electronic sensors. Quote, "We had specific information that we are still watching," Grime said. He would not describe the information any more precisely than that, but said it did not indicate that any of the several other major military sites in the area were threatened. "It was totally focused at us here," he said. Now, I'm telling you, this is weird stuff, folks. Weird. I'm trying to digest what it could possibly have been that would cause this. Domestic terrorist threat? Boy, what are we doing? Just warming up for the 19th or what? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Mary calling you from Seattle. I just had a couple of things. First, you remember about a half an hour ago, a gentleman called from the same area, and his newscast about the Como story was correct, the one he said.
Yeah, I thought that lady had it wrong.
What they said was that they thought they knew where the plane went down, someplace in Colorado, but they weren't sure. And that tomorrow, the next day, they were going to go look for it. But they didn't say they'd found it, you know. But they have a pretty good idea. It's someplace in Colorado.
Yeah, well, I'll be a lot happier when they find it.
Me too. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, if, you know, this object, the huge object?
Yes.
If it should turn out to actually be...
Something.
Hail Mary.
Oh, it's not. It's not.
Well, in my degree, we
no, it's... Well, you're right about that, really.
Are you willing to admit, if it does turn out to be a spaceship, that Courtney Brown was right? And are you... do you have enough heart to apologize for saying that his claim was ludicrous?
Yeah, if it turns out to be a spaceship and it was following Hale-Bopp and all that turns out to be true, I would absolutely apologize. Now, do you want to ask me what I think the odds of that occurring are?
Well, what do you think it is if it's not a spaceship? What could it be?
Ma'am, I don't make those judgments.
I mean, well, certainly it's not something we have or the Russians have.
Well, how do you know?
What, it's 25 miles?
Yeah, I know.
Gotta be from another planet.
Look, we don't know that this is not some strange atmospheric artifact or something. I don't know what those photographs show. They show something. That's all I know.
And as I recall, it's been a long time since we heard that November program, but as I recall, he and Whitley and Prudence had said something about that in April there were going to be some spaceships coming by, and, you know, it would waken the world up to the fact that they exist, and one would be quite large. You know, it was, Whitley probably would remember it better than I do.
All right, I'll ask.
It sounds like what's been happening over the last month.
All right, well, I'll ask what, yeah, the last month really has been incredible. There is no question about it, and we were told in no uncertain terms this spring... would bring very unusual things to our skies. So far, no disappointment. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. I'm in Ohio.
Yes, sir.
Going on the subject of these sightings.
Yes, sir.
It doesn't seem like anybody's mentioned the fact that back last month that you asked everybody to join together. Remember?
That's right, I do. That's a fine. Lay it on me.
And
careful. Should this come under the category of be careful what you wish for?
Well, I guess you're right there. now, this could be, or it could not be, or it might have been something coming anyway, but...
Yeah, it might have been.
It seems to me that, and I'm a fond believer in a joined power together will bring results.
Well, maybe you're getting those results right now.
That's a good possibility.
Well, I'm not sorry I tried it, so anybody who's writing me a nasty note now, you might as well quit. I reject it. I'm glad I did it. If that's what this is, then so be it.
Well, I'm glad you did it, too, and there's one other thing that nobody really realizes. Of course, there's a lot of sightings, but nothing bad has happened.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
Although, I'm not real crazy about this NORAD lockdown.
Yeah, well, neither am I, and of course, we can guess all night long. We're really not going to know.
And that's exactly what we're going to be doing, guessing all night long. Missing A-10, sightings everywhere, NORAD locking down. It's not good.
No.
I hope. All right, thank you very much for the call. I hope it's good, but I rather think that it is not. The sightings, so far, no big deal. Of course, we're just people who see things in the sky. We are not NORAD. Now, NORAD may be reacting in a very different way with very much different information than we are privy to, but... The caller is right, and I want to caution you all, what you're going to hear, other than what I've had in terms of hard information this morning, and I've reached out to get as much as I could, the rest of it is going to be speculation, and there's really nothing else one can do. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Art. Can you hear me very well?
Just fine.
I'm calling from a phone booth. I've been in a phone booth most of the night. I didn't want to call from my house. I'm calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
My wife's brother is not in the service, but he's been with the government for about 12 years. And about 4 years ago, he took a position where he told the family, all he told us was he would contact us once or twice a year just to let us know that he was okay. My wife got a very strange phone call from him early this afternoon, probably about 1:30. And he didn't say much. He didn't even identify himself. He just called her a name that she was called when they were young.
Yes.
And he basically said, take Mom and the rest of the family and get out of Louisville for this weekend. I don't know whether you realize it or not, but Louisville has a Derby Festival this weekend.
A what?
It's a Kentucky Derby.
Right.
Showing up in May.
Right.
We got a Derby Festival this weekend, and every year we have the biggest fireworks show in the country. And that's coming up on the 19th, coincidentally. Also this year, we're having the biggest air show in history on Saturday, the 19th.
Uh-huh.
Now, what is very odd is with this ATN been missing, and we're having an air show, you know, what's to say this thing can't just come by and people think we're gonna draw well over a million people within a 3-mile radius.
Yeah.
And, that'd be a hell of a statement for somebody to make, just for this ATN just to come in and blend in with the air show. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I mean, if they found this ATN, that would be fine. I mean, everything would, it wouldn't be a threat. But I mean, this was we don't hear from him, but maybe, like I say, on his mother's birthday, he usually calls in around Christmas. And it was just there was a weird ending to the phone call. He really didn't say goodbye or anything. We heard a voice in the background and it just hung up. That's why I didn't want to call from my house. So you can take that with a grain of salt or whatever, but I mean, it was just a very odd thing to go through this afternoon.
Well, thanks for scaring the hell out of everybody in Louisville.
Yeah. Well, better they know than not knowing,
I appreciate the call. Thank you. And I want to warn the audience, what you're hearing is from the general public. I have no way of verifying what that man said. I don't doubt his sincerity. Sounded sincere, but you never, ever know. It is the nature of open line talk radio. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, Art. I'm calling from Colorado.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say that I heard on our local news, they said that NORAD, since it was built in like the 1960s, had never gone to DEFCON 4 before.
I know. There is a lot more to this story than we've been told. Believe me, there's a lot more going on here, and I don't know what it is, and all I can do is sit here and speculate like everybody else.
I don't understand how they can say, that they can handle a nuclear blast, but the surrounding community shouldn't be worried or concerned. They can be threatened, but the surrounding community isn't.
What's the feeling like? Are you in Denver?
No, south of Colorado Springs.
What's the feeling like there? I mean, are people concerned coming up to the 19th here?
Yeah, there has been some talk about it. People more so think that if something were to happen, it would happen in Denver than, in the South.
Sure, sure.
So hopefully nothing will happen, though.
Yeah, that's what we need to hope, all right. I thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Take care. But it has been an odd period so far this spring, hasn't it? I have no idea how to explain the GOES 9 photographs that we've got up on the website right now. No idea. I can't possibly explain it to you. I got a call that they were there from Peter Davenport. And they're up there. You can go look at them, tear them apart, pixelate them, do whatever you want. I can't begin to explain, nor am I going to try, what they are. I'm just going to tell you it's part of what's occurring. Can't you feel it? Things quickening. Things beginning to move faster and faster at an exponential rate. Yes, I know you can. Hello, Art. I thought you might find this interesting. Bruce, listening in Denver, says, I've been attempting to get a radar picture from stations along the West Coast. Over the internet. Every radar site that I tried said radar data temporarily unavailable. Site I was trying were on the Weather Channel website. Usually I have no problem getting an up-to-date radar image, but tonight nothing is working. I've not tried other sites in the U.S. yet. I'm going to do that now, but I thought that you might want to know about this, so I dropped you, I dropped offline to let you know. Thank you, Bruce. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Pat from Fort Worth.
Hi, Pat.
I don't want to say that I know for sure, but I perceive, as Paul said in the book of Acts, that something is going to happen very bad to this country, and I think it is this weekend.
Why do you think it is this weekend?
Because on the 23rd of March, I heard these words when I was waking up. I heard myself telling this woman in 27 days she was going to die. And I didn't think a whole lot about it. And my husband was sick, and he didn't think about it either. But I just found this note, and I didn't even realize this because we had been sick. But on the 26th, I heard, we let this thing fall on us. And so then we figured out what 27 days was. And it is this weekend. I don't know if you should count that day or the next day or how you should do it.
Well, I have a young man, thank you, that predicts earthquakes by the amount of radon coming from his well, and we're dead center into the middle of that prediction right now, and he's calling for a Central California earthquake in mid-6 range. So we'll monitor that. These are strange times. They really are. Totally abnormal. and I know that you can feel it. And yes, we're building toward something. I don't know that it will be this weekend or next month or next year. But I know that soon something is going to change. And again and again and again, that's why I wrote that book. It's very important to me that you get an opportunity to read this book called The Quickening. It is proof. It is documented. It is painstakingly documented to show you that in every single area of human activity, things are speeding up. It's not an artifact of the media. It's not simply because we have mass communication. But things are changing at a very radical pace. And that process is going to continue until an event occurs. Spiritual? Geophysical? I don't know. That's the part I can't call. I'm not a prophet. But something's going to happen. Mark my words. First time caller line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Well, you're home, Art.
Yes, I am.
Hi, this is Susan calling from KGMI 790, Bellingham, Washington.
Now, that's a way to do a promo.
Well, you bet. I'd like to also corroborate the woman's call from the Seattle area that I heard on the news, too, that the military was fairly certain that they've located the wreckage. Then the last break, the ABC news said that the Air Force was virtually certain that the A-10 crashed into the Colorado Mountains, and they also detected seismic activity in that region that would help pinpoint the exact time of the wreck. But
well, let me drop an idea on you, all right?
Sure.
Let us, for the sake of pure conversation, say that you wanted to steal an A-10,
mm-hmm.
actually steal it.
Okay.
And you flew out of formation and you headed north into the Colorado Mountains. And you had a place where you were going to land your airplane.
Okay.
Before you landed your airplane, you'd probably take one of those 400-pound, 500-pound bombs and drop it.
Okay.
Now, that would produce seismic activity.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd go and land.
Right.
Now, I'm certainly not saying that's what occurred. I'm just suggesting it as a possibility to explain seismic activity.
Right.
But they do sound like they're beginning to narrow down where they think the airplane is.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be a lot happier when they find it.
Oh, I know. I just can't believe what's happening. And again, with NORAD saying that they overestimated a threat of attack, So they're just going to let all of us... Americans
threat of attack from who?
I know. It's like they're just going to let us... You know, I would really like to be with my children. And another thing, I had a theory that one of the reasons why I don't think that the government would warn us is because maybe they feel that it would be a merciful act not to. You know, I'm not condoning.
And under certain conditions, they might be absolutely right.
Right.
I wouldn't argue with that. It's just that I have concluded over the years that if something like that did come along, for whatever reasons they would have, they would not warn us.
Right.
They would not warn us. So it would be up to us to figure it out. And even if we did, what good would that do?
Absolutely. And Art, one last thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Love your show. I'm a college student and a single mom, and I stay up every night until 4 o'clock and listen to your show, and I'm still an honors student.
Well, that's great.
And I've had 2 UFO sightings.
Well, do me a favor and call your affiliate and thank them for carrying the program.
All right. Thank you so much, Art.
Take care, hon. Strange stuff. Well, has this night been strange enough for you? It certainly has for me. We're going to break here at the bottom of the hour.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
And these are going to be a rough few days ahead. And I suggest that you be ready for just about anything. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Generally open lines, unscreened. We just plow through the news of the night or the day and talk about anything you want to talk about. And in a moment, there's going to be more of that straight ahead. So stay right where you are. Talk radio with a twist, and usually a different one, every night. Did you say the Vatican was putting an observatory? Wasn't it in Arizona? Yes, indeed. Maybe that's just a coincidence, or maybe they have a specific reason for that location. I doubt they have anything to do with these sightings, but what if they had advanced information? Also, who was it who said there was going to be some UFO activity in the Southwest on one of your shows a few months back? Just a thought. That's from Robert. Thank you, Robert. Back to the lines, east of the Rockies. You are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm just curious to know if anyone else is having trouble accessing you through the AudioNet who has Windows 3.1.
I don't know.
I haven't been able to get you for about 2 weeks. I can't
really?
Get a stack error message.
What kind of error do you get?
Stack fault.
I'm sorry, what fault?
A stack fault.
Okay, that would be in your computer.
I'm able to get other programs besides yours.
Well, stack fault generally is an indication a stack is internal in your computer.
That maybe was in the software because I can access some stations but not others.
You know, I'm afraid I can't help you with that.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, I wish I could, but... I guess if you know enough to go, what are you running, Windows 95?
No, Windows 3.1.
3.1. Do you know enough to go into your config or bat file?
I have gone into it.
You have. You can increase the stack number and give that a try and see if that cures your problem. That would be my only suggestion.
So the stack can be increased like a buffer?
That's correct. Yeah, sure.
Oh, Okay, well, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. I hope I didn't lead you astray, and I hope your computer does not crash. West of the Rockies, I'm a fine one to be giving advice. You're on the air. Hello.
Good morning. Hey, I love your show, first of all.
Thank you.
Secondly, I'm calling from the blowtorch of the Northwest, KEX land.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I have a question for you. Several months ago, you had a guy on there, a writer, Robert somebody, who apparently, I think he was a Vietnam vet, sharpshooter, and he's an Oklahoma State policeman. I wonder.
Oh, yes.
What's
his
name?
I think his first name was Chris. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Yeah. He's writing presently, apparently, about a serial killer who kills police officers.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be listening. If anybody can think of his name, I thought his name was Robert, but I cannot remember.
Maybe you're right. Somebody else will definitely come up with it.
Oh, okay, I'll be listening.
Right, thank you. Take care. I'm sorry, I wish I could help you out. And again, I'm getting so many faxes, I'm not reading them on the air because I just don't want to keep having to repeat this. But if you order my book now, The Quickening, you will definitely, I promise you, you will get a signed copy, a signed first edition copy. But man, I'll tell you this, they are down to the last 25%. Of the first edition. After that, it's going to be about a month wait before we get the second printing. That's how fast they have gone. All I can promise you is you will get a signed first edition copy if you order now. Within the week, even less than, they're going to be gone. And I'll tell you when they're gone, and that'll be that for a while. Sorry. So, if you want a first edition definitely signed copy, autographed copy, you would want to call quickly 1-800-864-7991. You have my promise that you will get a signed copy. 1-800-864-7991. And that even goes for those of you who send it in the mail. And we are now watching the volume of incoming calls and the mail very carefully for the cutoff point. Are you making too many trips to the bathroom? Loss of sex drive? Two symptoms generally associated with an enlarged prostate. Not good. Now, there, of course, is a surgical remedy for that. Even some rather high-tech remedies they've been exploring of late. But before you go to those, you might want to try Dr. Michael Toplinski's formula for an enlarged prostate. He is a medical doctor and has developed this formula over the years for his own patients in his practice. And it's made up of all natural things that have been shown clinically to reduce the size of a prostate. Now, the deal is simple, very straightforward. It is you buy two bottles, you get a third free. You've got a three-month supply. Now, if your symptoms are not relieved in 3 months, you get your money back. That's it. It is distributed, sold by physician's choice, and the number to call is 1-800-249-6060. That's 1-800-249-6060. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Well, good morning, Art.
Good morning.
This is your friend Skip at Denver.
Hi, Skip.
Al 630.
Yes, sir.
Two things. Number one, on a lighter side, nothing important can happen because you aren't going on vacation.
It's a good point. I hope it's true.
Number two, on the opposite side, I think we need our horn, Art. After tonight,
yeah.
I think we do.
Well, something is totally wrong with everything we heard tonight.
Oh, it's askew.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of to describe it is it's, you know, askew.
Well, that's another cute way of saying the quickening.
Yeah, I think it works.
I don't see how anybody could listen to this program, or for that matter, any other that gets into this kind of material without realizing, or even the mainstream news, without realizing that things are, as you put it, askew.
And, you know, the most interesting thing is it's not one guest. It's everybody across the nation tonight.
I know.
That's what's really scary.
I know, sir. Thank you.
Play our horn.
All right. The horn, huh? Is it horn time, folks? When you hear that, you say to yourself, you know, I've heard that somewhere before. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Me and my radio turned off here.
Yes, please.
This is Andy in Oklahoma City. And today I saw more of these mysterious black helicopters. I'm not one of the black helicopter cultists or anything, but I've seen some activity. You know, I have Tinker Air Force Base right near here. They have a lot of AWACS coming in and out of there.
Well, there are a lot of black helicopters. I mean,
Well, okay. Well, they seem mysterious to me, and there's been a lot of low flight.
Wait. Why? Because they're black?
Yeah, and they have no markings.
Well, there are a lot of agencies flying those kind of helicopters about, sir. I have yet to hear of anybody getting mowed down by one, collected and taken away by one, harmed by one, or in any way hurt.
I agree. The weirdest thing that happened was I saw one land last summer in a middle of downtown type residential area, which was just the weirdest thing. But no, never seen anyone harmed. I had a quick theory about the A-10.
Yes.
I think it's probably true that he had friends and they wanted the bombs. And so they rigged a plan so that he could put the plane down and they could find the bombs and get away.
Well, it's as good as anybody else's theory right now. I just don't know. Maybe the day will bring news of the location of this aircraft, and that'll take a little bit of the strain off. But I'll bet you something. I bet we don't find out about this, the real reason for this alert at Cheyenne Mountain for some time to come, maybe even years to come. And I do not accept the explanation as given so far, and I doubt that many of you do either. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Let me turn this radio down.
Turn it off.
Get it. I get it.
Good.
Hi. Art, this is Francis from Salt Lake.
Yes, Francis.
I'm sorry to have missed your mother when she was on your program, as I am a World War II Marine and was stationed at Lejeune in 1944.
Well, I'll be darned.
And, Art, I recently read the Jeff Stearns book about the psychic lives of Taylor Caldwell. It's entitled In Search of a Soul, and it was printed in 1972.
Oh, yes, I know Taylor Caldwell's ex-husband now. He calls the show frequently, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he does.
Anyway, if you've read her books, you know how profound her works can be.
Oh, yes.
And she readily admitted that she had help in producing these stories, mainly through automatic writing. And Stearns questioned her one time while she was under hypnosis about her book.
Well, I'm not sure how much difference there is between automatic writing and channeling.
I don't know either. But that was how they put it. And she wrote a book called Dialogue with the Devil, and she referred to the book of Joel and the coming Holocaust. And he specifically asked her to identify the super people who are to be instrumental in bringing about this disaster. And she answered, quote, "They will clearly have come from another planet, as the time appointed when the long-suffering Lord finally says, I have allowed you silly people to go so far and no more," unquote.
In other words, the time is nigh.
I believe so.
Well,
it meant nothing to me when I first read it, but after everything else, and especially after tonight, I've become very alert about this.
Well, good for you, as you should be. One of these days, that is going to be true. One of these days, the people who say the time is now or near are going to be correct. Whether it's now or later, I don't know. But I sure know we are building to something, aren't we? First-time caller line, you are on the air. Good morning. Well, you would have been. Your dial tone. Wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Carolyn Tempe.
Yes, Carol.
Yes, and I'm the daughter, I guess the military brat daughter of a retired full colonel. And back in 77, we actually lived on Peterson Air Force Base, and I've been inside NORAD. And I can assure you that it's never wide open. There's a series of huge metal gates.
Right.
And if the outer one's open, the inner one is never open. You can't open the inner one until the outer one is sealed and vacuum shut.
So when you hear them going into a higher security status, very publicly, by the way, what do you conclude?
I don't know what to conclude from the higher status. In terms of shutting down NORAD, I would see it as being cautious of an internal threat, such as someone being able to breach security. Certainly any large assault on NORAD would be fairly futile because
One would think so.
Because of, it's a mile into the mountain. It's reinforced with a mesh of steel webbing, plating, and the buildings in there. There's no glass, nothing. There's no glass in NORAD. The buildings actually sit on huge, they're springs. They're literally springs. And I was 10 years old, but those springs looked about as tall as I was at the time, 3-ton springs. So any assault on NORAD is not going to hurt that. Maybe a truck bomb pulling up to the front of NORAD might be able to dislodge rock around the entrance and wreak havoc in traffic in and out of the
I suppose, in a sense, even an attack, futile though it might be in terms of actually causing damage, would be symbolically important.
Very true.
I appreciate your call. Now, there is that to consider. In other words, even though real damage, I think all of us agree, really couldn't be done by anybody with terror on their mind, it is reasonable to conclude that somebody might think of about the symbology of such an attack. Just as on the Murrow Federal Building, the bomb symbolically went off in the middle of, America's heartland, an area where you would least expect it. Shock value. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello? Going once, twice, gone. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, is this Art Bell?
Yes, it is.
Hey, your photos about Ghost 9 satellite?
Ghost 9, yes.
Yeah.
You're a little hard to understand, sir. What kind of phone are you on?
Can you hear me better now?
Well, I hear you. It's just a little distorted, kind of.
Well, regular phone.
Okay, anyway, what about the photos?
Those were over San Francisco, right?
They're what?
Was that the ones over San Francisco?
West of San Francisco, yes.
West San Francisco. Okay. Do you think that could have been a detonated ICBM?
Thank you. You're asking me a question I just can't answer. I don't know what those photos are. Hopefully we have not come to the point where you cannot take a photograph and say, hey, what's this? This is anomalous. This should not be here. And that's all we've done. We're not saying what it is, what it isn't. We are simply putting it up there for your examination. That's all. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell. How you doing?
Okay.
This is Les in Alaska.
Yes, sir.
And, I used to live in Arizona myself.
Yes.
In Cottonwood, northern Arizona. And I've seen a few things long time ago, though, you know, just unexplainable things. And my grandmother, I was raised with my grandparents. She used to work at Fort Wingate in New Mexico.
Right.
And she used to, I don't know, she told me that she used to decipher codes and stuff like that. I don't know, military stuff. And ever since I was talking to you, or not talking to you, but listening to you, about UFOs and stuff, I asked her about that, and she never really came out and told me one way or the other, because she was like, well, you know, I took an oath, you know, not to disclose any of the stuff that we learned.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty interesting, you know. Can you guys still see Hale-Bopp down there?
Oh, yes.
Pretty good. Yeah, we see it, like, all night, every night.
Yes, I guess in Alaska, you've got a. It comes more or less right overhead, or has been.
Oh yeah, it's really nice. A friend of mine got some pictures of Hale-Bopp with the Northern Lights.
As a matter of fact, I believe a few photographs like that appeared in the Anchorage Daily News, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, I saw them. You know, our porch is just, you know, Hale-Bopp Central, and. We see it all night, and the Northern Lights were up just a little while ago, but they weren't that bright.
They had some a couple of weeks ago that were just green as could be.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw Hale-Bopp in the middle of that. That must have been something to behold.
Oh, it's awesome, especially when they're dancing around, you know, in the sky. It's just, it makes you glad to be alive in this time, you know?
I am glad to be alive in this time. Thank you very much for the call.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Take care. And listen, I want to remind everybody that we're going on two cruises, and there are possibilities for you to still come along on both. One in, we're going to Alaska, August 23rd. That's Alaska, August 23rd. And then October 1st, we're going to Egypt, Israel, the Greek Isles, Rome. We'll just be all over the place. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art Bell, this is the Talking Rock from Abdelmore Heights near San Diego. How you doing?
The Talking Rock.
You remember that caller.
Yeah, I do.
Boy, I've only tried to call you a couple times. I'm lucky I got through. Hey, I wanted to know, what happened with Tailbot splitting into six pieces?
Well, there are still many people. As a matter of fact, if you listen tomorrow night, Richard Hoagland has an announcement about that.
Oh, great.
So that's what's coming up tomorrow night, and that'll have to do for tonight because we're out of time. So you get the honors.
I get the honors only after my second time of calling.
Do it.
Great.
Do it.
Good night, Cosmos. Good night, world. Good night, America. Good night, everyone.
And he's got it down. People know what they're talking about. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.